This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Brian, of course, is a graduate of the Sorensen Institute's Candidate Training Program, class of 2003. Mm-hmm. And you spoke at the class of 2007 Saturday night here in Charlottesville. You and your lovely wife, Jean, came in and talked about what it was like for you to run for school board, which you were successful in the at-large seat and have not yet announced whether you're going to run for your seat again. Your four-year term is up this year, and you'll be making that decision. I guess you're in conversations with your advisors right now and will be letting us know soon. But it was
funny. I told Gene I wanted to get through that evening with the Sorensen crew and see if I was scared out of running again. And after hearing the sheriff from Newport News talk about his campaign, I was having flashbacks to 2003 again.
It was great. And also your daughter spoke, and that was amazing. What is she, 14 years old?
Yeah, Abby. Yep.
Got up, and folks, it was amazing. This little girl gets up and stands up and speaks to this crowd of about 30 people, and we were just hanging on her every word. I mean, it was really amazing. You really don't see teenagers, by and large, who are that comfortable getting up and just talking to a group of adults with not a smidgen of any type of fear. I mean, very comfortable and telling the story of what it was like when her dad ran for political office. And,
well, thanks for mentioning that. It was fun to bring them there. And that was one of the points we wanted to make for all these prospective candidates, that it's really a family decision. If you decide to run for office, the whole family is going to be involved. And, you know, of course, our kids,
whether they want to or not.
Yeah. And so it was interesting to hear my children's perspective on it and get their feedback.
It's Tuesday, so let's kick off the growth and development discussion. Before we get into it, there were some population numbers that we spoke with Mike Sparr last week of the UVA Cooper Center. And
thank goodness for Seville Podcast. I listened to that yesterday, so I got to hear it on tape delay. And I thought it was interesting, both in the local media and then in his conversation with you, there was discussion about the trends in the state and, of course, Loudoun County and Fluvanna County and how explosive they are growing. But really not I didn't hear the real numbers for Albemarle and Charlottesville. So I crunched those in the little spreadsheet here. And what I've discovered is that Albemarle County over the past year has grown by 706 people. So we don't often hear that year-to-year figure. The Weldon Cooper Center is reporting the numbers from the last census. So they're sort of accumulating how many overall people. And that total for the county is 6,620 since the 2000 census. But year-to-year, we've actually slowed down. Last year, the number was 800. So this year, the number is 706. So that growth rate in the state slowing down, we can actually see that in Albemarle as well. And that sort of flies in the face, I think, to a lot of people of all the development they see taking place around us.
Yeah.
That our population is growing, but not at the rate it has in the past.
And it sort of supports the argument of some folks who are trying to say the scenario is people still are moving here to work here and live here, but they're having to live in Green or Fluvanna or Nelson or Buckingham because they can't afford to buy in the city. Or Albemarle County. So that also supports that as well, because we're seeing explosive growth in those satellite counties around Albemarle.
And certainly a lot of the jobs are here, and that's adding to our transportation woes. We've talked about that. The city of Charlottesville over the past 1 year has grown by 148 people, but overall they've declined since the last census. So this past year saw a little spike up by 148. But the trend year to year is losing 55 people a year on average. That's
in
the city of
Charlotte.
Yep.
Wow, interesting. Over at SevilleNews.com, Waldo has posted recently, and by the way, folks, if you aren't regular readers of SevilleNews.com, it would be my recommendation that you check it out once in a while or get the feed to your blog aggregator. And you can certainly stay in touch with the conversations that are going on in our community as to what are the big issues and what's coming down the pike in the news. And Waldo posted a really interesting post today with a ton of links to growth stories that might be elsewhere in the state, but definitely have something to do with our area. Your broad strokes, your initial response to...
Well, Waldo's often provocative on his blog, and the statement he makes here that really got me thinking was there is no more powerful political force in Albemarle County than developers. And I thought that was the most provocative statement. And he goes on to say that it's probably the most powerful political force in the state. And on that, I'm more likely to agree with him. I actually don't agree with that position when it comes to Albemarle County or the city of Charlottesville. Are you surprised?
No, I wouldn't agree with it either. I think the most powerful political force in our area is the university.
I think it's the people.
Oh.
Now, that may seem like a cheap answer.
Touche. Well, it does, but you're probably right.
But when you think about it, I mean, we've got developers, we have elected officials, and we have the public.
Yeah.
The public is putting in power the elected officials that are making this decision. And I hope this is a longer conversation we can have during the show, but I think there's a case to be made that the public certainly deserves to be the most powerful political force. They have some work to do on that front.
Yes.
The media certainly plays into that as well. The media has a job to do. And a lot of this is being talked about given what's happening up in Loudoun County. The Washington Post did a series of articles where they went in depth looking at the Planning Commission and the Board of Supervisors up there to see how cozy the relationship was with the developers and the lawyers and everybody trying to grow Loudoun County. And they found, on the face of it, a pretty cozy relationship and a lot to be concerned about. Now, when I look at Albemarle County, I see something much different. I think up there they've certainly in Loudoun put a spotlight on what appears to be an incestuous relationship that's now being investigated, I gather, by their Commonwealth's attorney.
Yeah, it's pretty bad, and we should just say that the article in yesterday's Post is titled "The Sleaze in Loudoun." It's pretty, pretty bad. I mean, to say that they're cozy is being friendly.
There
it's
seems
being
to
a little
be
nice.
Clear connections between votes and people getting into office and financial support for those candidates.
Yeah.
But if you look here locally, we simply don't have that scale of growth that I think leads to some of those unethical decisions. We also don't have a lot of money in local politics. Now, one thing Charlottesville Tomorrow is going to do is try to shed some light on that front. And as I have mentioned on the show in the past, in 2007, we are going to track all campaign contributions to City Council and the Board of Supervisors. That'll be available on the Virginia Public Access Project website.
VPAP,
VPAP, and we'll be able to link to it there. But we're supporting VPAP's local data initiative, and that's going to allow them to take these paper filings from each candidate and put them in the database and make that transparent. The great thing there, the public and the media will be able to go pull up any donor and look at any candidate by industry or by profession and see what the trend is for that candidate, who is supporting them. But again, in Albemarle County, City of Charlottesville, there's not a lot of money in these local races because there's not as much at stake.
You don't see Big Pharma tripping over their shoes to try to give money to a Board of Supervisor candidate in Albemarle County.
Well, there just isn't the amount of land and the amount of housing being developed. The scale is just totally different. I mean, let's look, and then I want to get back to, you know, the power of the people. Let's look at a real example. Phasing and clustering were two examples in front of the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors. And in my mind, one of the things that really carried the day on that topic was, you know, a dozen rural property owners who came forward and said they had concerns about their ability to use and own their property. Those dozen people, I think, ensured that Lindsay Dorier from the Scottsville district voted the way he did. And I think they put a lot of pressure on David Wyant in the Whitehall district to vote the way he did. So just the public coming forward and making their concerns clear can be very powerful. The other thing I would say,
and that's a good point, because there's a lot of folks listening who might hear something on the radio or read an issue in the Progress or the Seaville or the Hook and think, I definitely have an opinion about that, but they don't go down to speak because they think, the board's not listening, city council's not listening, but they do.
They
really, really do listen. Now, everybody's got an opinion in local office, but when they have those public hearings, they are really listening, and they're trying to get a gauge for where is this community right now.
The other thing that differentiates, I think, Charlottesville and Albemarle from Loudoun County and other places like that is that we're sort of think of us as a medium-sized community. In a small town, developers and elected officials might have a cozier relationship just because there aren't a lot of people watching the process. There aren't a lot of public watchdogs. In Charlottesville and Albemarle, there are a lot of public interest groups that come to every single meeting of the Board of Supervisors, the Planning Commissions, the City Council, and they are all representing information back to their constituencies. So whether it's the Blue Ridge Home Builders Association, the Free Enterprise Forum, the Chamber of Commerce, or environmental groups like the Piedmont Environmental Council, Southern Environmental Law Center, Sierra Club, or media organizations, Daily Progress, WINA, Seville Weekly, all of those groups are at these meetings, and they're helping inform the public. You wouldn't see that level of activity in a small town or a small rural county in the state of Virginia. Certainly you have that sort of oversight in a place like Loudoun, but again, there I think the development's at a whole different scale.
So we're just big enough to attract that type of oversight and interest.
Right.
For folks to come out to these meetings.
I think that helps keep everyone honest and informed.
Well, I would certainly hope so. Brian Wheeler is our guest of Charlottesville Tomorrow. If you'd like to join the conversation, it's 977-1070. David is on the line in Charlottesville. David, thanks for the call. You're on with Brian.
Yes, and actually, Mr. Barefoot, this question is actually for you. I know that Mr. Wheeler is typically on Tuesday to discuss his perspective on what development and growth really is in Charlottesville. But I actually would like to know whether or not you've ever considered having other people on your show with different opinions. Examples would be the city and county assessors, Mr. Woodzett, Mr. Barber, the chief executive officer of the Board of Realtors, Dave Phillips, the Free Enterprise Forum, Neil Williamson, or actually some developers like Charlie Hurt or Wendell Wood. I would actually like to have some dialogue with those gentlemen on your show with Mr. Wheeler because, you know, as much as Mr. Wheeler may know, he is not the be-all, end-all of knowledge for growth and development in our community.
What?
I agree with that.
You're not? David, it's a great suggestion, and I have taken you up on some of that already. I was very proud to have Barbara Freed on the program of the Freed Companies a few months ago, and she gave us the whole history of how she and her husband got into the development business in Northern Virginia. And, the Freed Companies is really responsible for many of the major projects that helped create what we know as Northern Virginia. And they're working in this area up near the Sheets on 29.
I'm fully aware of who the Freed is and what they're doing, but and they were a nice person to have on your show. I did not hear them at that time, but these other names are people who have actually been in our community for a long, long time, and they really have even a much better and more deeper understanding of what's going on in Charlottesville, the history, you know, and hearing their perspective would be a nice change and to have a dialogue with Mr. Wheeler at the same time.
I think it's a great idea, and let's do it. Let's have them get in touch with me.
Great. The ball's in your court. I'll be waiting to hear.
Or they can email me at barefoot@wina.com, and I'd love to hear from them. If Wendell Wood wants to be on this program or Charlie Hurt, they can name the day. Would love to have them come in.
Well, very good. I'll do my best to have them call you.
That'd be great. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
All right. The phone number is 977-1070. Based on the people that he suggested we talk to, I got the impression that correct me if I'm wrong, Brian, but I think I heard him sort of saying that we're missing a pro-development topic or the pro-development perspective, and I don't feel like I'm anti-development at all.
Well, I think
maybe I'm not being clear enough.
in my work with Charlottesville Tomorrow, I certainly try to find that balance. And our organization typically is not taking a position for or against a lot of these developments, whether it's a community like Biscuit Run or a transportation project. And the Free Enterprise Forum, you mentioned Neil Williamson. Neil and I are at all these meetings together. In fact, I'll be joining him in a half an hour at the Biscuit Run hearing. And I know he's there because I just left the county office building. And I think it'd be great to get some of those voices on. It would also be great to get some of the voices from Piedmont Environmental Council, Southern Environmental Law Center, some of these other groups. I think those are the groups who are in front of these elected officials. As we were saying, there are a lot of public interest groups. Charlottesville Tomorrow's goal is to just get the information out there and surface it from wherever it's coming from. I've certainly mentioned Neil's reports on the air on this program, but I've also mentioned reports from the Southern Environmental Law Center. So, again, we're trying to cover all the bases. I definitely do not pretend to be the expert on all these things.
Yeah, but I will say, just for folks who are listening, the reason I have Brian on is because it's a nonpartisan organization. He doesn't have an agenda, so he's not a developer and he's not anti-development. He's neither one. He's with an organization whose sole responsibility and mission is to inform the public about growth and development and about the decisions that are being made at the local level and educate people about the process that goes on when it comes to growth and development for the whole purpose so that people feel like they can get involved. Is that an accurate description of you're up to over
mm-hmm.
there? So I feel very fortunate that you, who go to all these meetings, can come in and tell us what's happening at all these meetings, because I certainly don't go to them, and I read about them online. But his point is well taken, and I think it's a great idea. Would like to have more folks come in, whether you're pro-development or anti-development.
I don't care. It's one of the great things about our community is we do have a lot of these resources in town. They can all contribute to the discussion. That informs the community, and people can make a smarter decision, whether it's speaking about a project in front of the elected officials or casting a vote in the voting booth.
Right, right. We were talking about the power of the people here in Albemarle County and Charlottesville and the folks that come out to our meetings, specifically in reference to the latest post at SevilleNews.com, which if you haven't read it, it's a terrific post with lots of links to some growth stories and issues that are going on around the state and here regionally.
We certainly need the public involved, and I think that is a lot of what Charlottesville Tomorrow is about, is to help them make informed choices. I guess other observations I've had in the course of doing this work is that the developer works directly with the county or the city of Charlottesville on their project, so they certainly have an advantage in that they're in all these meetings about a specific project. The observers on the outside are sort of slaves to the staff report. Once that staff report's released, we can take that and sort of do a frantic analysis and try to figure out what it's saying. But the developer's been engaged in long conversations with the local government. That certainly does give them some advantage. The attorneys and the developers work on this all day long. That's their full-time job. A lot of the volunteers in the community, and we have, I named a number of interest groups, but there are also a number of people who just volunteer their time. And they go to these meetings, and they say very thoughtful things to our elected officials. So we're at some disadvantage, and that's just sort of the nature of the business being done here. But I don't think that leads to the developers being, the most powerful force, as was suggested in the blog posting, or that there's something, illegal taking place. I've never heard nefarious about it.
I mean, they're doing, and Waldo says this, they're just trying to make a living. This is what they do, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I mean, and you need an engaged media to keep an eye on all of this. You need the public involved. I think shedding some light on campaign contributions would be good. But, the power ultimately, in my mind, rests with the people if they use it. And they can do that by voting. They can do that by sending emails. They can do that by asking questions at these public hearings. I think all of those things are very important.
We're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow, and we must take a break here at the bottom of the hour for some local news and weather. Andrea, please hang on with us. Andrea's on the line from Louisa. Hang with us. We'll be with you in just a few minutes. This is Charlottesville Right Now on News Radio 1070 WINA. Andrea's on the line from Louisa. Andrea, you're on with Brian. Go right ahead.
Yes. My question is, when they have these developments all over the county, such as Louisa, and they're going up everywhere, how do they come up with their assessment every 2 years or year after year that costing the people that have been living in the area that long more and more and more, but yet they don't see no road works or nothing like that done to their particular area? How do we get the reassessment so much without having any kind of vote on it or anything like that? Can you answer that for me, please?
Absolutely, Andrea. You raise a great and timely question, because I know I just got my reassessment notice in the mail.
And you said, oh!
And it went up. Those things are done based on market comparisons of home prices and what things are selling for in the market. So it's not really, what the assessors try to do is go out in the community, look at comparables, and put a fair market value on that piece of property. Now, you are absolutely right to point out that not only raises your property taxes and how much comes out of your pocket, but it makes more revenues available to local government. In Louisa, it sounds like they make that reassessment every 2 years. In Albemarle County, we're switching to an annual reassessment. Next year we'll be doing this time next year we'll be getting our reassessment. We won't be waiting 2 years. And every year the local government, whether it's city, county, Louisa, Albemarle, has to make a decision about the tax rate. So if you keep the tax rate the same, you might have somebody say, oh, the tax rates, the headline might be tax rate stays the same. But everybody could be paying, if your assessments are going up, everyone's paying more in taxes. So the tax rate could stay the same as assessments go up, more revenues made available. This is the source of a lot of confusion.
Yeah, because, see, we're Americans. We're wise to that. Because, we know they're still raising our taxes.
Well, but then if somebody says, hey, I just lowered your tax rate, Coy, 2 cents.
Yeah, but if you raise my assessment up like crazy, I'm still paying more tax.
And that's the point. And the local government has to advertise that accurately. It may be portrayed different ways by politicians, by headlines on newspapers, but you have to follow that carefully. The important thing, I think, for the public to know is every year their elected officials make a decision about how to use those new revenues. If assessments are going up and they're not dramatically lowering the tax rate, there's new revenue available.
Government is making a lot more money.
Government is making a decision to invest that money in their community in some way, and the public needs to ask questions about
that. An example would be the city of Charlottesville, which lately has always had a surplus. And it might be due to the very high property tax.
Well, surplus is one thing. All local governments and school divisions work with, we call it in Albemarle County a sort of a lapse factor. And you need to finish with a surplus because state law says you cannot, run a deficit. The budget has to be balanced every year. So there needs to be a little bit of padding there based on, the way payroll changes each month with employees coming and going and things like that. So there's some variability there. Certainly the large surplus in the city got some attention when that was announced. But it comes down to a decision by local government, whether it's dealing with a surplus or dealing with added revenues at the time of, writing a new budget.
Yeah,
that's a decision made by our local government.
And this is the thing that Andrea's got a good point. And I think a lot of people, when it comes to the property assessments and the tax rate, they sort of feel left out. They sort of feel like, how can I talk about this? I don't feel like I'm in on the discussion here about these assessments. They just keep going up, 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 and I open my mouth and nothing comes out. Nobody's listening to me.
And you can appeal that. There's a process in each locality where you can appeal your reassessment, and they can try to explain that to you, why they came up with the number they did.
Andrea, thank you so much for the call. Betty's on the line in Charlottesville. Betty, you're on with Brian Wheeler. Go right ahead.
Thanks. I wanted to talk about this issue of the developers versus the general public in the equation of what's happening around Charlottesville.
Great. What do you see?
Well, I think I've lived in Charlottesville since 1972, and I've seen a very interesting shift. When I lived in the 70s and 80s, the downtown mall did not exist. People were really wanting development. The community planning department is what was the agent of planning. So in the 80s, I think it was the 80s or early 90s, they changed the name to the Community Development Department. And what I've seen now is this huge shift, as there's so much money in development here, and I feel like the balance is really tipped in favor of the developers and that they really have the ear of our elected officials. I'm not saying that's corrupt. I just think that's what's happened. And it used to be that the city councilors ran on a platform of neighborhood preservation. And then we had this shift to neighborhood development. And I think we desperately need to get back a balance, and that the councilors and the public need to really find a way to make neighborhood preservation much more important, because if Charlottesville loses its neighborhoods, I think it's really going to lose its character completely. And that's what we're about ready to see happening, because the county has zoned all around the city high density, and they have not taken into consideration roads. They're not getting money from Richmond. They're not really holding the developers' feet to the fire, because they say they can't. But the elected officials in the county went ahead and zoned that land high density. So it really is their responsibility. And I think the city people have to really organize and prevent being overrun by county traffic problems. If they don't build their own roads, I think we're going to have to take care of other solutions on our own.
Betty, you're obviously a very knowledgeable observer and longtime resident. I guess a few comments come to mind. One, do elected officials have given ear to developers? Absolutely. But they also do it to advocacy groups. And in my experience, our local elected officials are routinely meeting with all of these folks, whether it's a developer or, you know, an environmental group for that matter. So I think they're getting plenty of feedback. You know, the trends in downtown Charlottesville, I think you're right to point out in the there's some significance to the changing name that department has had within city government. Currently, it's named Neighborhood Development Services. Jim Tolbert is the head staff member of that in the city. I've been working downtown since 1990 after I graduated from UVA, and downtown has certainly changed. And in my mind, it's much more, it's a more vibrant place to be, and it's a lot more successful, I think, for businesses and a more attractive place to the residents. And that's, I think, consistently the feedback we get as a community in the community surveys that are done, that
well,
people like.
I wouldn't argue with that, but I'm really talking about the neighborhoods outside of the central downtown
and
area.
Let me get to that point.
And the impact of the county zoning.
You're absolutely right, and that will be on full display in 15 minutes at the county office building when there's a public hearing on Biscuit Run.
Right.
And the last public hearing on Biscuit Run was dominated by city residents, primarily from the Fry Springs neighborhood, concerned about traffic on Old Lynchburg Road, originating from the county of Albemarle. This is something that we've spent some time talking about on our blog and also on this show, but those are very valid concerns. And I pointed out on the radio last week that Kevin Lynch, in a transportation work session, City Councilor Kevin Lynch said, that the county has built a city the size of Charlottesville around Charlottesville and
right.
has not built the roads to keep up with that.
With no integration. I mean, there's two separate planning departments doing this.
They're not
integrated.
Well, but,
I think the county has to think about this. If they elect representatives in Richmond like Rob Bell, who votes down money for transportation, then they are shooting themselves in the foot.
Well,
they have got to pay attention to what their representative in Richmond is doing, because if we don't get help from the state with these roads, there's no way we're going to be able to build the Eastern Connector, the Southern Connector, and the city is going to be forced to close Old Lynchburg Road if the county doesn't build its roads.
I think that's...
And the county, the county government, at this point at least, is too shy to hit the developers up for a serious contribution to pay for those developments.
And that'll be a big part of tonight's conversation, because it's all about transportation tonight. We'll be talking a lot about the proffers.
Well, I'm sitting in the parking lot there right now, so I'll catch up with you guys later.
Thanks, Betty, so much. Betty on the line in Charlottesville. Brian, go ahead.
The other point I would just point out to Betty is that if you're concerned about things in Richmond, don't worry about whether you have one delegate or another. If you live in the city of Charlottesville and David Toscano is your delegate, send David an email. But also, I think if you're a resident concerned in the city, Rob Bell represents the entire southern border of the city of Charlottesville. He represents that portion of Albemarle County. So if you're a city resident concerned about traffic coming in from Rob Bell's district, I wouldn't hesitate to send Rob Bell and Cree Deeds both an email saying what you think about transportation and what Richmond should be doing.
Brian, what's going to be going on tonight? Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow is our guest, and the phone number is 977-1070. And I have not heard from you yet, and you know who I'm talking about, so you pick up the phone and you give us a call. I'm talking about you. Quit looking over your shoulder. 977-1070. Tonight, Biscuit Run. Remind folks again, there was a Daily Progress article today. Biscuit Run, it really, I think Jeremy Borden did a great job of laying it all out. Biscuit Run, right just south of the city in Albemarle County, 650 single-family homes, 2,450 apartments, condos, and townhouses, 150,000 square feet of retail space. The site, the whole development is expected to generate over 30,000 trips per weekday both within the development and outside. Massive. It is the largest development in the history of Albemarle County.
It is. One of the numbers I would just comment on in that article today, and one of the big proffers coming out of the applicant is to widen Route 20 from this development up to Route 53, make it four lanes. It's currently a two-lane road. The number in the paper, I believe, is around $17 million. But that's in today's dollar, and that number does not include right-of-way acquisition, utility relocation, preliminary engineering. In fact, earlier in the same staff report, they put a number on this project of $29 million almost. So a $29 million project to widen Route 20. The developer is offering $5.5 million as a contribution towards that one road project. Another big road project that I'll be talking about tonight in my comment, I'm actually going to step away from the recorder and step in front of the microphone tonight, is to talk about the Fifth Street Bridge over I-64. The Fifth Street is another one of the arterials that's heads down to Biscuit Run. And the traffic impact study that's going to be talked about tonight highlights the fact that that bridge will have to be widened to handle the traffic.
It's going to cost a fortune.
That will cost a fortune. The only proffers coming forward right now are to add turn lanes on the ramps to get, you know, two lanes of traffic turning onto the two lanes on the existing Fifth Street.
Fifth Street Bridge is down there by the Hardee's and the food line. Okay.
So what the traffic impact study says is that you need another full turn lane running the length of the bridge to allow people to get on and off the interstate most effectively.
So, Brian, are we getting to the point, are we evolving as a society where the taxpayers, through their taxes that go to Richmond, we're not going to pay for these roads anymore as much as we have, that the developers, somebody who comes in and says, I want to put, 1,000 more homes and 3,000 apartments in this part of your community, that person is going to have to bear the brunt, and then, of course, they're going to pass that cost on to the price of the homes. So to live in this area, those prices will go up, and most people already can't afford to buy here.
You know, I think, Coy, it's a balancing act, and that's the way of saying Richmond needs to do more clearly. We've identified the needs we have as a community. We have a long list of transportation priorities for both the city and the county that would help traffic. We also have ideas about public transit that are being pursued, and I think that's another positive area of cooperation between the city and the county, looking at a regional transit authority. And there are lots of ideas out there about running streetcars and bus rapid transit out to places like Biscuit Run, over to places like the Fontaine Research Park, up 29 North to places like North Point and the National Ground Intelligence Center and the North Fork Research Park, and then even out to Pantops, where Martha Jefferson Hospital is moving. So we have all these different employment centers. We have lots of big housing projects in the county's designated growth areas. But clearly, we're not getting the roads built that we as a community have said are our priorities. So Richmond needs to do more. But we are already doing some of those other things that Richmond's asking for. Some of the Republican proposals in front of the General Assembly talk about creating designated growth areas. Well, the county's already done that. The city is also a designated growth area. Betty was commenting on the growth in the city, and I think that's a legitimate conversation. What do we want that growth to look like when it goes higher? What do we want that vertical growth in the city to look like, and where is it most appropriate? We also have something that I think Richmond would look kindly upon, which is the putting a priority on interconnecting our neighborhoods. That's something that the city is looking at doing more of, improving their grid of streets. It's something the county has identified in the neighborhood model as a way to connect neighborhoods so that you can allow multiple ways for traffic to move around so that we're all not getting out on the same arterial roads and clogging them up. That is not always readily received by some of these neighborhoods. When they're told a new neighborhood, whether it's North Point or Biscuit Run, is coming in next door, they're not always excited about the prospect of being interconnected. But I tell you, Coy, what they're saying in Richmond is, we're going to penalize you if you don't do that. If you build cul-de-sac developments that only have one way to get out, we're not going to take those roads into the secondary road system, and we're not going to give you dollars to maintain them. So that would add a burden to the local government. If
a developer comes along and that's what he or she wants to create, then they're going to have the money to make up for the balance of the money to keep those roads maintained.
Well, then there's the developer, and that burden would likely not be on the developer because they're not going to make private roads. They will be public roads, but local government will be left paying the bill on those. So, and there you get to the developer's contributions, and I think the developer does have an important role to play, especially on something this big that's adding that many vehicle trips. We need to see some large proffers. I've compared these proffers to projects up in Loudoun County. Loudoun County per household is getting about three times what we're getting here in Albemarle. So I think there's some negotiating work to be done. But it's a balancing act. The developer has a role to play, Richmond has a role to play, and taxpayers are certainly going to play a role maintaining these roads. We would be better off pursuing these kinds of development, though, that are interconnected, because I think that is what is most likely to get supported by Richmond transportation dollars.
We're talking with Brian Wheeler. It's Tuesday, Growth and Development. Smith is on the line. Smith, I got about 2 minutes. You're on with Brian.
I'll make it real fast. I'm a state employee. I'm within 3 years of retirement. I've been laid off twice. You keep telling me it's Richmond's problem. Actually, the citizens in the state of Virginia need to stand up and start telling the guys in Richmond who are writing the checks. They also need to start standing up to the city and to the county, the people that they elect, and say, "Whoa, we're tired of this."
Smith, what do you think? What is high on your list of transportation improvements that we need to make?
They all need to sit down, and someone needs to put them in a room and let them talk about it until they come out with a solution instead of, well, the county is responsible for this, the city is responsible for that, Richmond is responsible for that. They need to develop a game plan instead of having three different people developing three different game plans.
My observation is that we have – what I like about our community is we have a good game plan in that a lot of thought from both city and county officials and transportation experts has gone into a long laundry list of priority projects. So I think there's – in our case, we have a good plan locally. Unfortunately, what we don't have is the dollars to make it work yet. The answer to that is going to be a combination of both, as Smith said, people directing their attention to Richmond and asking for more and asking for help, but also looking locally to developers, and then we as a community are going to have to bear some of that cost as well.
You know, I commute every day. I get up at 3, go to work, come back. And I can tell you, everywhere I have commuted for the state, all the roads end up getting in bad shape because people don't want to live in the county or the city because of the traffic.
You know, and you also have the cost of housing is also forcing a lot of people to move further away from the places where they work. And I think that is one of the big challenges here locally.
Brian Wheeler. Smith, thank you so much for the call. Brian Wheeler is with Charlottesville Tomorrow online at SeavilleTomorrow.org. And you can catch him tonight at the big meeting at the Albemarle County office building. You're headed over there right now, aren't you?
I'm heading out the door.
And this is a Biscuit Run meeting, so if anybody has this is a public hearing, right?
It is.
So this is a chance for folks in our community to come forward and tell the county what they think about Biscuit Run, the largest development in the history of Albemarle County, planned for just south of the city. You folks have a great night.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.